This is Full Circle, and that was Straighten Up and Fly Right from Lawrence Hobgood's great new album called Honour Thy Fathers. I caught up with Lawrence during his recent visit to the UK touring with Barb Junger, and I asked him how he came to work with Barb and produce her album.
We share a manager, Gail Boyd, who is Barb's manager in the States and my manager everywhere. And I forged my partnership with Gail, fortunately for me, rather soon after my breaking off with the singer that I worked with for many years, Kurt Elling. And one of the very first things that Gail suggested was asking me if I would be interested in working with Barb. And I had heard some of Barb's work. I won't pretend to have been a complete devoted aficionado at that point, because as we know, there's a lot of music out there, but I knew that she was an intelligent and very, very inspired singer in terms of having a real idea of what she wanted to do. And so I instantly said, yeah, that sounds great. And of course asked, what are we talking about? And Gail said, well, I think she wants you to write as well as play and probably be involved in production elements as well, which is what turned out to be the case. And so it all went from there.
Well, it's interesting you say that you were involved in the writing and the production, because I know that you work a lot performing with Kurt Elling. You've worked closely also with the bassist Charlie Hayden, Ernie Watts. Do you find that there's a different approach to working with the vocalists like Kurt and like Barb and like Carter Calvert, whose album came out last year that you also produced as well? Do you find that there is a big difference between the vocalists, how you work with them, and then how you work with the instrumentalists?
Yes, there are differences. There are also some great similarities that have to do with the larger questions that always get asked when you're doing any project. I think specifically of the fact that I've done a lot of direct live stuff. You probably know I did a lot of CDs for the Name label earlier. Yes. in the 90s, and those were almost all recorded direct live stereo, and not in recording studios, but in churches or theaters. So that's a much different process. Even when you're working with a singer in that context, as sometimes happened, as a guest artist or whatever, there's not really a lot of... It's not the same sort of pre-planning. But that said, the way I like to work with singers, the ideal thing is for there to be a real collaboration. So it's sort of a sliding scale on its way to that. With Barb, it certainly is a very real collaboration that's taking shape, in that we got together and spent a lot of hours talking about repertoire, then selecting repertoire, then planning how we might do things, where there's a certain rubric that I gravitate towards that has to do with analyzing the lyric and also interacting with the singer and finding out what their instincts are, and yada yada yada. The point is, when you're playing with instrumentalists, there's not as much planning and discussion. I will say frequently there's not enough. Jazz musicians are of course notorious for not wanting to talk as much about what we're gonna do. Yeah. And that makes sense at a certain point, but up to that point I feel I'm one of those people that thinks that maybe a little bit more planning and discussion might have positive results. But that said, I try to be diplomatic when I talk about this, because you do have the occasional instance like a Bobby McFerrin where a given singer is actually a theoretician as well. There are not many instances of that. It just doesn't turn out that way. For a number of reasons. But whenever you're dealing with an Ernie Watts or, for instance, the drummer in my working trio, not the fellow who's on the record, but a great, great young drummer in New York named Jared Schoenig, is the son of music educators. He reads music. He plays piano fairly well, sort of almost a junior Jack DeJohnette. So when I'm talking to Jared, there's a certain language that we both speak, or if I'm talking to Ernie or any jazz instrumentalist who's done the requisite study for especially any kind of advanced improvisation, there are certain things you don't need to say. Or put differently, there are certain things that you can say in shorthand and they know exactly what you're talking about. And that, neither for better or worse, but that's usually not the communicative scenario with a singer. So, of course, there are things that singers understand and communicate about that a lot of instrumentalists don't and could learn from. So right. It kind of works both ways.
I first saw you many years ago in the early 90s in Jerusalem, the Jerusalem Jazz Festival, and I was spellbound. I would admit it. I was spellbound by your approach to the music, the playing. It seems that you've spent a lot of your career enhancing other people's sound and career, rather than just say concentrating on necessarily you being the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered, do you feel that being with all these different artists and producing them and being the musical director for so many years, has that sort of hindered your career, your own career, or has it had the opposite effect? Has it made you into who you are today?
Complex subject, but what I will say is this: I don't feel that there is enough truly unique music. I've never been comfortable doing something that just sort of feels derivative from something that someone else has already done. I guess this idea would be epitomized by every once in a while on the popular radio, you'll hear a quote-unquote cover of something that sounds almost completely the same as whatever original. And hey, you know, people that like that, that's cool. Artists that want to do that, I'm not trying to put anybody down, but myself, so why would you want to do that? Why would you want to do something that somebody else has done? And then on a very nuts and bolts level, why would you want to write or conceive a single note or a single phrase that doesn't have some sort of method with an aim of being fresh and unique? So the way that this plays into the collaboration thing, and the reason that I think I have taken the direction that I've taken, it just has to do with the two heads are better than one thing. You know, two people have different views, and in fact, I would say, as a generalization, the best collaborations will come from people who don't think the same. Which is not to say that two people that sort of look at things the same way might come up with some interesting stuff just because they work well together and they have good ideas. But to me, two people that can find a good harmonic, so to speak, in their connection, who bring different strengths to the table, that's going to result in the more interesting work. That was certainly at the center of why Kurt and I were an effective collaborative partnership. But it's been, to me, at the center of all the, particularly the collaborations with singers. Another sort of more practical way to answer your question would be to say that I'm not somebody, I never have been, I admit, I was not somebody who in my 20s decided to throw myself at being in the practice room 10 hours a day and composing music 15 hours a day because I was in a hurry to get to some elusive goal. That has never been the style of life that I was interested in. I was back then more interested in encountering strange characters in random coffee houses and having bizarre two-hour conversations with people I'd never see again and just kind of living life, kind of a free right. spirit thing. Yeah. So for better or worse, again, that's kind of the way that I've done things, and I've now come into a more serious time where I am applying myself to my own projects as a greater priority. But it has been during all of these years of particularly working with Kurt, but also many other people, that I have, on a slower schedule, by my own admission, learned my writing craft and my playing craft. And I think, again, just my opinion, and obviously subjective to the point of self-interest, sure. I guess, but like great wine that ages, but even that is a more complex question because, as we know, some wine, if you let it go too long, it starts to turn the other way.
Right.
But certain wines, if it's the right chemistry to begin with and you age it under the proper conditions, it just keeps getting better and getting better and getting better. And so I very hopefully am trying to pursue that scenario.
Give Me the Simple Life, taken from the brand new album from the pianist Lawrence Hobgood. Continuing with the interview, I asked Lawrence how the album came together. You have released now your own album called Honour Thy Fathers. You've got some incredible musicians on it, John Petrucci and Kendrick Scott. Mm-hmm. Was this then a collaboration with these other two musicians, or was this your project, the start, and then you sort of brought them in for their ideas?
Well, the answer is both. And I'll tell you, and I'm going to tell you something a lot of people might not actually divulge. But first, to answer the first part, this was definitely my project, which is actually another way to answer your question. This is going to seem like an absurd analogy, but I remember a movie with Tom Selleck called Quigley Down Under, and he specializes in long rifle shots. And so there's a little element of the plot that develops that he doesn't like to use hand pistols. He considers them whatever. And so his enemies get to the point where they think, well, he's no good at that. And then, of course, by the end of the movie, you find out that he's actually maybe one of the best hand pistol shots in the world. So just that he doesn't, that he normally has spent a lot of time eschewing that, doesn't mean that he's no good at it, you know. Right. So just because I have spent a lot of time collaborating, and of course have learned much from that, doesn't mean that that I have any sort of a necessary shortcoming when it comes to just planning my own project all myself without there being any collaborative elements. So in terms of the writing, the planning, selection of repertoire, that was completely non-collaborative, unless you count the little crazy voice in my head as being something or someone that I collaborate with. But the thing I was going to, that I'm going to tell you that some people might not divulge, what I wanted to do, I knew I wanted to play with John and Kendrick. I knew those were the two guys I wanted to record with, but we'd never played together. I played with John on Kurt's record, The Gate, and then Kendrick, or Cads as he's known to his friends, played on The Brill, and then toured extensively with Kurt also. So Kendrick and I had played a lot together, but never with John. But I had assessed both their vibe, their abilities at quickly consuming and learning complex music, because that's a very important part of especially the stuff that I write is composed. It has compositional elements that set up the improvised parts. And so I knew that those were the two right guys, but we had no relationship as a trio. In fact, I can honestly say we had never played a single note together as a trio, or I think in any other context, until the first day of recording in the studio.
Oh, wow.
Because, here's the other part of it, because of the way I decided to do this, I decided to just do everything in the recording studio. So there was no rehearsal before the first day. We just met in the studio. And fortunately for me, Kendrick had just finished recording his next record for his group Oracle in the same studio. And so this, anybody that understands the recording process will know that this was a very, very lucky break on my part, because on the first day of a recording session, you usually spend an hour and a half to sometimes 3 hours on the drum sounds alone. And in this case, Kendrick's full kit was already set up, mic'd, and ready to go, because he'd literally just been in there right before that and had never broken his stuff down because he knew he was coming back. Huge break for me. And the other way in which that was a huge break was they have a really good house kit at Sears Sound, which is the great studio where we were. And I had said to the engineer, since we're not using the house kit for the recording, let's bring it out into the main room, because everybody was in a booth, you know. The piano's out in the really big room, and John and Kendrick were in booths, and I said, let's bring the house kit out and set it up right by the piano, and so when we're learning each piece, we can be literally just feet from each other, gathered around the piano, and we'll rehearse and learn each piece, however much time it takes to do that, and as soon as we're ready to record, everybody go off to their booths. And that's literally what we did for 3 days. And so I'm divulging that, obviously, because I feel like if you listen to the record, it sounds like a very, very tight unit.
So it's called Honor Thy Fathers. it's a nice story behind it. Would you tell us why you called it that?
Well, I have been very fortunate when it comes to mentors, starting with my own father, and I think, as you know, the first track, Sanctuary, is dedicated to him. Each track on the record is a dedication to somebody. In a couple of instances, people that I personally knew, meaning that they are people that folks haven't heard of, probably. And then the rest are famous musicians, some of whom I've been lucky enough to meet, just people that influenced me through recordings. And at this particular juncture in my life, reflecting on what I wanted to do, this acknowledgement of the influences that have shaped my music and my take on things was not only desirable, but it also represented an interesting challenge. Because I feel like, for instance, Give Me the Simple Life, which I think, if I've noticed, is a track that you've played, I really trying to kill several birds with the same stone there. I wanted it to sound as if you could hear Oscar's influence in the way that I'm playing, which I think it does. But on the other hand, from the point of view of the arrangement, I couldn't resist the tongue-in-cheek aspect of trying to use the way that we wrote it and played it to give the lie to the statement. You know, there is no simple life anymore. I think we know that now, more than ever. So each track on the record, I wanted to have it mirror a little bit the person that it was dedicated to. But also just to say that having come to the end of a major collaboration that took up almost 20 years of my life, and facing now uncharted territory, the idea that you would start that, to me, beginning that process by recognizing those that have helped shape what you have become, at least at that point, is admittedly a slightly different question for a 55-year-old than it is, for instance, for a 25-year-old. Yeah. Every once in a while you see one of these, maybe a sports figure, somebody's written their memoir at the age of 28, and I just, it's just like, really? Really? Do we really need to hear about all the wisdom that you've gained in your 28 years of life? No offense to the 28-year-olds, but, you know, life is long. But to me, there's almost sort of a prayerful aspect to that. You know, I'm embarking on a new part of my life where I will be doing more of just my own thing, and what shapes that at this point needed to be recognized to me first before I could go on further.
Does that mean that we might get to see you over here in the UK with this album, and hopefully with John and Kendrick? Possibly?
Well, it's possible. I would love for that to happen. What is more likely is that you will see me with my working band. The drummer is Jared Schoenig, who I mentioned a little bit earlier, amazing bassist named Matthew Cloese. Part of recording with John and Kendrick involved coming to terms with the fact that they would not be super regularly available to me because they are both so in demand and they all have their own projects and everything like that. Meanwhile, these two gentlemen I just mentioned are pretty amazing players. But on a practical level, they're more readily available. And in fact, we have a little U.S. tour coming up. And there's also just the factor of, if I get that trio to the point where we've played so much that we've got a real, as we say in jazz, a real thing happening, you know, then the idea of convening with John and Kendrick, ironically, as great as that would be, and I'd be happy to do it, but it does mean rehearsing from scratch. They're not going to remember all this stuff. We recorded it. It's a year and a half ago that we recorded it. So that would be a whole process. Whereas Jared and Matthew, at this point, they could play this stuff with their eyes closed. So, and that's what you want to put in front of people, is that sort of telepathically connected unit. So I am very much hoping to bring that trio over.
Well, I have one last question for you. It's a slightly novel one that I like to do. And it's I ask you about different pianists, and then I ask you to choose one, why you choose that one. And the first ones I'm going to ask is Count Basie or Duke Ellington. And the second one is Art Tatum or Oscar Peterson.
Boy, you pick toughies. Well, I would pick Duke. With that's a hard choice.
I know.
Hard choice. I'm sure you do. But I would pick Duke just because he was such a great composer. In fact, one of my great stories is that when I was 11 years old, my father took me to see Duke. He had officially retired, but it was when he was doing the Sacred concerts, and I actually stood online and got his autograph, and it's framed and hanging in my house. But that aside, when that happened, my dad, I was 11 years old, and I wasn't playing jazz yet. I was still studying classically, and my dad said, you need to hear this. This is one of the great composers of the 20th century, and that's, I believe, correct. And there, so in his playing, there you always hear that compositional element in his playing. And as great as Basie was, he was so spare and essential, especially in his latter years. But there's a depth to Duke's thing that goes beyond just playing the piano. So I would have to choose him.
Okay. And the other one was Art Tatum or Oscar Peterson.
Also very, very tough. Very, very tough. And so in that case, sort of like in traffic, if something bad happens, no matter the specifics, it's always the person behind who is at fault for not being careful enough about observing what was going on in front of them. Although in this case, it's sort of in the reverse, because they're both so great. I'm going to say Tatum, just because he was the progenitor. Art Tatum was the progenitor of a lot of stuff. I even heard one story once from an old alto player I knew, and to be fair, I haven't seen this credited anywhere else, but this guy said that there were horn players, including Charlie Parker, who transcribed Art Tatum lines, and interestingly enough, that's what gave the impetus to the whole bebop, what became bebop way of thinking on the horn, which then in subsequent years pianists had to come back and learn from that. You can listen to Tatum records, and there are sections of lines that he would play that are, other than the different recording quality and inferior pianos he was forced to play on and things like that, there are sequences of notes that he played that are completely modern. And, you know, he was operating more in a stride context. And admittedly, he was stronger as a soloist than an ensemble player. But there are some people that feel that he still, to this day, is the only person who's come that close to fully mastering this very, very complicated instrument. And so I'd have to say Art Tatum.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me.
You're very welcome. Very, very great pleasure to be here.
Again, that was Lawrence Hopgood talking to me about his latest album called Honour Thy Fathers. I could have chatted to him for many, many, many more hours. He is a fascinating man with a very long, a very varied and a very successful career. You're listening to Full Circle and I'm Ruth Fisher. Now, if you want to, if you so choose, you can listen back to the show during the week using the playback button on the website.